I think we need to push AI to its fullest potential and go beyond thinking of it as an intern, go beyond thinking of it for content creation only. Push this thing. Unlike in collaborating with humans where there's a fear of being judged, this thing will not judge you. Be stupid with it. Ask it crazy questions.
Welcome once again to the AI Edge podcast for enterprise marketers, a show dedicated to sharing insights, strategies, and experiences from a group of experts who have successfully implemented AI solutions in a large enterprise B2B software company, specifically in the context of global marketing, how that effort can connect to sales, IT product, and the rest of the business. I am Edine Porter de Leon, and I am joined today by a very special guest, Liza Adams, who is an AI advisor, fractional CMO, and generally amazing person who speaks at MakeCon and lots of other places. Liza, welcome to the show.
Hi, Edine. It's so awesome to be here. Very excited to speak with you and your audience.
Oh, yes. It's a wonderful, enthusiastic group of enterprise marketers and also B2B technologists. So super fun crowd. I should actually take a moment to thank everyone who's reached out and told me all sorts of wonderful, fantastic things. I love the support out in the community. I love the support for listeners. So all those listening, all those who have provided me feedback, thank you so very much for all of your support. Now, it is Liza, not Liza. So make sure everyone remembers it's Liza Adams.
Leading Tower of Liza, right?
It's Liza. Yes, exactly. And so today we've got a really, I feel like a really great topic, and that is surrounding the strategic value of marketing. Now, there's always been a question surrounding what is the strategic value? What is the focus of that conversation? So since we're in the topic objective section of the show, as we do each time, those who listen to us or those who haven't listened to us before, we do multiple topics of the show. We got topic objectives, then we go through strategies and tactics, teams and tools, business impact. And then at the end, we do a lightning round. So right now, really sort of what's that topic objective? Who's it for? What's it for? As I like to say, this is sort of, I think, really leaning into the marketing leadership, because that's that segment of the marketing organization and effort that has to have that board level and C-suite level conversation with regard to the strategic value of marketing. Give me your perspective, Liza, as a CMO, an AI advisor, and you talk to a lot of companies. What has been previously that conversation around the strategic value of marketing?
I have a very personal perspective on it. I obviously talk with a lot of CMOs and executives, but I came across it firsthand. And I knew that there were some perception challenges of marketing, but I didn't realize the magnitude of it until I was in the situation where I found myself really wanting to lean in on serving on boards and finding the right opportunities to network with the right people, to figure out what it means to serve on a board. I do have a lot of passion for getting more perspectives, different perspectives into the board, whether it's from women, women of color, just different backgrounds. And I realized as I went through that journey that there weren't a lot of marketers on boards. In fact, there are only 41 marketers on Fortune 1000 boards. Very small. That's a Spencer Stewart study stat. And that there are less than 3%, I believe it's like 2.8, 2.9% of board members that have marketing experience. So I was disheartened.
2.8, 2.9%. Yeah, that is, I would say, disheartening.
Yeah.
And that goes to tell you sort of what the focus or what the value is perceived by the board of marketing, that experience needed on that board level conversation.
That's right. And in fact, there is a Forbes article, can't remember the gentleman's name, but he sits on multiple boards, started a number of companies, and basically said there's no room for marketers on boards. So I read a little bit more deeply. I'm like, well, that's terrible. Okay, I'm going to read the rest of this article. So I dug in and I read it. And basically, there are many reasons why we're not on boards. But I think one of the biggest reasons is that we are perceived as tacticians rather than strategists. In fact, he said there is no room for tacticians on boards. So what that really tells me is there continues to be this perception that there's a lot of weight placed on the tactics of marketing.
Yeah.
So people see the ads, the websites, campaigns, email, social posts, but there's very little appreciation in some aspects of the strategic work that needs to happen before all of those great things come to fruition and come to life. So the deep market understanding.
Yes, the deep, because there's things like, for example, like when my focus was, like at VMware, for example, was deepening relationships with the CIO, very strategic audience. And there was not campaigns and wasn't about ads. It was about really deepening relationships, shifting perception, and increasing engagement, and thereby, of course, increasing wallet share, accelerating sales pipeline, all of those things. And that was a very strategic approach. But to your point, Lisa, there's still a perception problem with Merck.
Yeah, and it is a perception issue. However, it's a double-sided challenge. Not all marketers are perfect. We're not all good. We are human. So in the world of grow at all costs, I think we found ourselves doing all these tactics because we have to grab share. We have to grow the business as quickly as possible. And in the process of doing these things quickly, we may have forgone some of the deep thinking and some of the deep research that we needed to do to support our North Star, deeply understanding the customer. So I think there was a little bit of that, of challenge in the growth at all cost era. But now, as we move into the sustained profitability era, that should flip the script, right? That actually, in my opinion, is a gift to us marketers, because now what that means is we need to pick and choose the select segments that we can serve really well, rather than going after many and all segments. So we're flipping the scripts. We narrow the aperture. We understand those markets deeply, and then we personalize for those markets rather than going a mile wide and an inch deep.
Yeah. And I think some of the big challenges is that scaling that effort in the past has been extremely difficult. Like segmentation, while extremely important, has been tough to do at scale and in the way that you're talking about. And also, many will argue that segmentation is almost like a very thankless job. Even really, really good segmentation increases performance and results so, so well, but like not a lot of people want to do it. And so therefore, it's one of those things that say, okay, well, let's just segment by vertical, or let's just do some sort of very rough segmentation, and let's do a little bit more of that sort of spray and pray, even though nobody will admit that they're doing spray and pray. Everyone's very strategic. Everyone's very focused. But ultimately, it's tough. It's tough to do. It's tough to scale. And now with some of the new tools, some of the new generative AI tools and other tools, we can now scale that segmentation more. And is that one of the components that you're seeing is giving the ability to have that more focused, more strategic effort, therefore that more strategic conversation around marketing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how you couched it as it's a thankless job to do market segmentation. Nobody wants to do it. Super hard. It requires a lot of research. But my gosh, we do that right, the rest gets so much easier. We do that wrong, we're throwing money out the door. And I've told people this many times. AI doesn't fix the problem. It amplifies it.
Yes. It puts a magnifying glass on it. But the thing is, without the magnifying glass, you couldn't really see the problem, or you couldn't even deal with it at scale.
Just like we can't out-exercise a bad diet, we can't out-campaign a bad product market fit. So if you got bad product market fit, you skip the segmentation, hard things to do. Well, guess what? It's just going to amplify that once you take it to market. So I think it's just such an important point to create that focus around figuring out your top market segments. And to your point earlier, people think it's hard, but AI is going to help us. Let me give you an example. I did this with one of my clients, and they were a COVID darling. Yeah, grew significantly during COVID, but post-COVID, and there's a lot of companies that kind of fall into this camp, post-COVID, the growth wasn't there. It was flat to declining. And before COVID, you know, with COVID, it was like no marketing. They just grew. The product was awesome. There was demand for it because everybody went remote. Everybody was buying online. But post-COVID, that changed. So the leadership team said, hey, let's go after more markets, more segments, so that we can expand the opportunity. And I said, no, let's not do that. We're chasing profitability. And if we go expand into new markets and go after more, profitability will go down. So we did a lot of work. Marketing team and product marketing in particular did a lot of work to help the leadership team understand how we choose the right segments. Because the CEO said, oh, we should go after health and beauty because that's a huge market. CPO said, no, let's go after food and beverage because our product better aligns, our product roadmap better aligns with their needs. And then CFO said, no, let's go after electronics because that one has higher growth rate. So each one of them had a different point of view, but from one perspective. Each one was right, but very narrow perspective. So what we did as a marketing team is, okay, let's deeply understand the market, not just from one perspective, but multiple perspectives. We actually had 8 different criteria by which to evaluate these different segments. Market growth, market size, competitive intensity, win-loss rates that we've had with those customers, strength of our ecosystem in those markets, number of reference customers, and there were a number of things, right? So you could imagine if you could envision a matrix, we had the segments on the columns and the evaluation criteria on the rows. And then we used AI, in this case, it was ChatGPT Teams. We put the data for market sizing that we had from an analyst, redacted that data, and asked AI to essentially do a forced ranking on the market size. So let's just say we're evaluating 8 market segments. Highest market size gets an 8, lowest market size gets a 1. And then we asked it to do a forced ranking and then kind of did a heat map.
That's fabulous. And so we're in, I think, now the strategies and tactics section of the show, which I think is great. So we're really getting to the meat of it. Because I was just about to ask you, like, how is AI like helping you scale this effort? This is a great example of leveraging this AI as a tool. It's not, the hero is not the AI. The hero is not the technology. The hero is you and those that you are working with. The marketers are the hero of the story. And I think we're going to continue to sort of drive that point into people because AI is a phenomenal tool. But AI isn't a strategy, just like internet isn't a strategy and electricity isn't a strategy. Water running into your building is not a strategy. It's just another tool to be able to do something that'll now you have a different perspective on doing things differently. You, in that case, if you didn't have ChatGPT Teams, you may not have been able to suggest that as a way in which to accomplish the goal. And you may have had to choose a different road, but now you're able to scale that effort. Whereas before, classically, you would say, okay, great. Yes, we want segmentation. We want it to be really personalized, but we don't have the resources or the time in order to be able to actually do it in the way that you're suggesting that it needs to be done. So this is what we've got. Okay, you go and do it by vertical and this other, 2 other criteria, and then boom, away you go and create your campaigns. And that's just the way we have to do it. But now that's different. So now marketing has a different way to approach things. Therefore, the conversation around the marketing is different.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The framework or the thinking and the approach was the human. The product marketing team came up with that framework. We have key principles by which to evaluate segments. We just trained AI or we just guided AI and prompted it to help us do it a lot faster because we've done this before, done this multiple decades in the past, but my gosh, it's like a spreadsheet nightmare.
No, God. I like that AI is starting to fix spreadsheets because that's been the one thing I wanted us to do. Can you just... Not, I don't want to do the spreadsheet thing anymore. I love spreadsheets and I love what you can do with them. It's just one of those things like we have to do the heavy lifting. Oh, there was this one agency that just did nothing but just these sort of little tasks where you had to do just churn through lots of spreadsheets or you'd have to just change different things on branding material. And it was all these like little detailed work and you're just like, you have to throw money in an agency. Now you have this tool where you can scale the effort and also the agility of being able to do that. Because if you had to go like to an agency, for example, and explain the project to them and understand what, there would be multiple meetings about what you need to get and you would have to evaluate the data later, like, well, it's not really what we're going for. But you were able to, like you said, come up with the framework. You're able to then execute with a tool that allows you to do things that you couldn't do before. And how did that change that conversation then? Did that shift the perception of those that you were working with to say, oh, wow, marketing is something different than I originally thought it was?
Let me just go back to that example. So if you could follow the train of thought. So we did that for each one of the different evaluation criteria. And at the bottom, it added it all up and then it came up with a forced ranking and it said, oh, these are your top 3 segments. That wasn't the answer. Mm-hmm. That was just a starting point. Now I and my team had to go into the executive leadership team and say, all right, now we have a basis for discussion. Now we can look at the opportunity from a 360-degree perspective. Yes, CFO, you're right. From a market size perspective. Yes, CPO, you're right. From this perspective. But now we have this analysis across 8 criteria. Let's look at this. And that was the start of the healthy debate between the different people on the executive team. We now looked at this heat map and determined, hey, does that make sense? Let's apply human oversight on top of this data that AI helped us force rank. Let's have a discussion. And then let's see, do we agree with the results? During that discussion, we actually said, hey, let's have AI change the weighting on the criteria, because not all of these criteria are created equal. So strength of our partnership might be more important than the number of reference customers. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So we applied weights. And then when we applied weights, AI was able to help us analyze it and change the answers. At the end of that meeting, we had a really healthy discussion and we said, okay, we have hypotheses for our top 3 segments. We didn't stop there. We didn't say that's our answer. We basically said, we are going to do some validation into the market. We're going to talk with partners. We're going to test this with some customers, some prospects, with some analysts. And then after that, in a couple of weeks, let's come back together and let's see where we are with this. So came back 2 weeks later and we decided on our top 3 segments. At that point, this whole thing lasted, I don't know, a month. And 2 of those weeks were validation. Mm-hmm. At the end of that month, we had a crystal clear strategy around who we're going to go after. That was a gift, not just to marketing, but everybody in the company.
Yeah.
Because everybody knew exactly the ideal customer profile, the exact audience, the persona of those buyers. For marketing, we didn't have to peanut butter our marketing budget anymore. We knew where to double down because we knew exactly the segments that we wanted to go after.
That's fabulous. I love that example because it talks to how the AI was a tool that allowed you to gain mind share rather than it being a competition of opinions and ideas or egos potentially. It became a very data-driven, fluid conversation in which you were able to paint a very clear picture of the value of the various decisions that could be made. And then that facilitated, like you described, that discussion where you, the marketer, the human, was able to leverage a tool to be able to take them on that journey. And everyone arrived at some place where, like you said, you were able to very specifically target your marketing dollars. And not just so you know they would have the most impact, but all those involved would be able to clearly understand how those were being used, why they were being used, and the value that they were going to be created. And that, I think, is super powerful. So I think at this point, let's switch to the next section of the show, which is the teams and tools. Because I think there's a lot of people who are listening right now saying, great, that's fabulous. I love the story. I love the impact. How'd you do it? We know the tool was ChatGPT. And Teams specifically, so this is the pro version of what some would say is quote unquote best, I'm using air quotes, of course, on a podcast, best frontier model. People have different opinions, but choosing Teams, could you just walk the listeners through at a high level, even could you get too super detailed, because I'm sure there's probably a lot in there, like how you actually sort of accomplish this with the team. So it's the team marketers accomplishing with the tool. How'd you do it?
So kind of described it at a high level earlier, but I talked about the 8 different criteria. Let's just take market size as the basic example. We had market size for each one of those 5 market segments, uploaded those market sizes to ChatGPT, and basically simply said, here are the market sizes for the following verticals. Create me a forced ranking based on highest to lowest market size, and then create a heat map based on that. And did that for each one of the parameters and said, create a table with all the forced rankings, all of the heat maps, and then at the end, show me the total across all of these things, across all of the evaluation criteria.
So it was a scoring. So at the end, each one got a score.
Yeah, each one got a score. Even thing like win-loss analysis, that was data taken from HubSpot. Because we had HubSpot as our CRM. We also had a partner portal So that's where we track the leads, the conversions as a result of doing business with a partner. So in the evaluation criteria that said strength of partnerships, that weighed in to how we evaluated that particular criteria. There were some qualitative ones like fit with roadmap. Well, that's a discussion. Let's understand the key requirements of these verticals. And then we had to tell ChatGPT, here's roughly the ranking that you need to do for that. So for those that are not quantitative, we applied just human judgment and said, all right, give this one an 8 and give this one a 1. And then in the discussion, we actually collaborated with ChatGPT during the executive meeting and I started changing the numbers.
In real time. That's amazing because it's so the speed at which I think that people may not have their appreciation for. It's not just time saved when you're doing individual contributor work, saying like, oh, you can do this 3-hour thing in 15 seconds. Now you can have a meeting differently. Now you can present data and then dynamically interact with the data, ask questions of the data in real time that humans just can't answer. It's too much to answer on the fly in a meeting, but you can do it with tools.
Yeah. The other thing about this is we turned it into a custom GPT because we knew that we're going to be doing this again and again. So I've turned it into a custom GPT. I've put it on the store. People can actually use it. And what I love about custom GPTs is that it democratized strategic thinking.
Nice. I like that concept.
Yes. That approach, that process can now be used by anyone on my team in the company or even outside the company now that I put it on the store. Now the biggest challenge is not the tool. It's not the approach. It's really data because the data comes from different places. It took us a while to get it to the right form so that we could feed it into ChatGPT teams because we had to format HubSpot data. We had to format our partner portal data and so on and so forth.
Was that manual? The formatting, was that manual or?
Yeah.
Getting your data in shape a lot of the times is a manual process. Yeah.
Cleaning it. So.
And people are realizing too that it's one of those things that great, the tool is fabulous. Just like all sort of analytics tools and observability tools and other data analysis tools are great, but they all then force you to do things like clean up your data, like connect systems, like go through and make very important decisions about what's important, what's not important. And I think that's one of the things is that it's so good at this that it's shining a light, like you said earlier, it's shining a light on what isn't working or what is broken. Very much hyper-focused. You're like people before they would say, oh, no, we can't do that because it's too complex and it takes too much people and all that stuff. Now you could say, that's not an excuse. So now you have to take a close look at, okay, we can do it now. So now we have to look at the things that we need to do the things with. And, oh, look, this data is a mess. Oh, look, this system is out of date or it's not connected to the other system. And we're starting to see that the processes aren't in place and the data is not in shape and we got to fix those things.
Yeah. Garbage in, garbage out, right? So.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
I'm always suspect when somebody says, oh, ChatGPT or Claude or Gemini did not give me a good response. It's average response at best. Right? I'm like, well, look at ourselves in the mirror. Did we guide it well enough? Did we give it any data? Did we give it expertise that we have? Did we share that expertise with ChatGPT? Just like if I was to import something to you and I want you, Yadin, to do something for me, I need to give you context. I need to guide you. I need to give you the framework.
Yes.
Same thing with AI.
And it's a dialogue sometimes too. And before, you couldn't have a dialogue with a lot of the data analysis tools and other things. There would either you'd code, you'd make other things in there, you'd make requests, there'd be some automation or process around it, but you then couldn't have a conversation. Once it outputted something, you couldn't ask it a question about the output. Now it's completely different. You can have a conversation with someone where you output something and you say, okay, that looks interesting, but the data looks a little bit off. Did you include this and that? Did you consider X, Y, and Z? And then say, oh, no, I actually didn't. Now that I do, here's the information. And that is just a tectonic shift from what we had to work with before, where you had to ask, like try and have a process happen on data, get an output, and then try and figure out, is this good? Is this right? And let me check the settings. And now you just have a conversation with it.
I will up that one more. You can go beyond doing a dialogue. You can do a trialogue or a multilogue.
Trialogue. This is good. Let's have a multi-log right now.
Let's have a multi-log, right? So in that particular situation, we had both ChatGPT and Claude helping us. Both sets of data were fed to ChatGPT and Claude. And I asked them for their key takeaways and insights, and then fed each other's answers to the other and asked it to cross-reference and said, Claude, ChatGPT said this. What do you think of its response? What are the pros and cons of its response? What do you think is good about it? And what do you think it forgot? And what are some of the weaknesses? And then vice versa. ChatGPT, here's what Claude said.
Yeah. What do you think about Claude's critique, ChatGPT? They're like, ooh.
Oh, exactly.
Ah, Anthropic's Claude, I feel like, is totally wrong. Only OpenAI's ChatGPT is right.
No, actually, I love doing this multi-log because they are very respectful of each other's responses, even when they disagree.
What a see respectful. See, humans can start to learn from this. Look at the AIs being respectful to each other when critiquing each other's work. And so that's a wonderful, healthy dialogue in between two individuals. So
it is so healthy. This ChatGPT would say something like, I respect Claude's perspective. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, just the congeniality there. I like that you bring up the point of using the multiple frontier models, because anytime that I've got something, especially something really important, I run it through multiple models and do this especially because this is probably like the only times in human history where you'll be able to just open like a whole bunch of models, not have to pay for them, and just see what they all output and then see what each of them thinks about each other. So I'll have Perplexity open, and sometimes I'll have Jasper, run it through Pi. Check out Google's Gemini. What does Claude think? What does ChatGPT have to say? And then what is Ryder going to do with this? And you get interesting different perspectives. Some have internet access, others don't. Some know certain things and others don't. And so I think it's really interesting to try to experiment and try these out. Do different things that allow you to get different perspectives, because you can just get stuck on one model and one output. And like you just showed, there's tremendous value in using multiple models. I want to switch to sort of the last section right before our lightning round, which is the impact. So you talked about, in this example, how impactful it was to be able to do this work in order to be able to get crystal clear guidance on exactly who you're going to go after as far as segmentation, what market you're going to hit, dollars are going to be focused. But I think just taking it one sort of level higher from the topic and objective of the show, which is flipping the script, changing that conversation about the strategic value of marketing. What are you seeing as the impact of this example on this specific company and the perception of marketing strategic value? And then how do you feel like this example, along with others, is changing the narrative throughout multiple industries?
I think this example in particular shows that marketing is not just all about the tactics of marketing. Marketing cares about the business, the growth of the business.
That's actually the whole purpose of marketing. It's like their number one is the growth of the business. That's pretty strategic.
Yeah. And we are leaning into our North Star. The North Star of marketing is about deeply understanding the customer. So we deeply understood the customer and shared our insights with the executive team so that the executive team can make decisions, not just for marketing, but for the entire company.
I love that point. That's a really good point, because that's a big part of shifting that conversation. Marketing is giving the leadership of the business the perspective it needs to make decisions, not just marketing decisions, but business decisions.
That's right. And in fact, we put our money where our mouth is, because we actually even said, oh, given that we're going after these three markets, in some areas, we don't need this much money to market to these segments, because we already have brand recognition. We already have deep relationships with them. Where we need this money is in product, because in product, we're going to be able to enhance the product. So for at least 2 quarters, we shifted the dollars there, and it made sense. So now marketing is viewed as a team player rather than, no, I want more money so I can do more tactics.
Everything. Yeah. I need more ad buys. I need more banners at the airport. I need more everything.
That's right. So I think with that kind of a strategy and marketing say, oh, let's shift the dollars there, it actually amplified the results of marketing, because now we have a product that better matches the needs of the market versus us trying to market a product that is not matching the needs. So it just makes so much sense when we think about this more as the business, purpose of growing the business in service of the market.
I think that's fabulous too. And you're connecting things that have classically been not as connected, where you have marketing and then you have product over here. And then marketing and sales usually have a really nice tight relationship, but marketing product doesn't have that same type of relationship, which I've always found a bit strange. And marketers would scratch their heads and say, like, well, why don't we need to talk to the product people? We're marketing people. We're off doing marketing. We don't have time for the product people. It's like, they're kind of one of the most important people in the business is the product people, because you're marketing it. And so I always think it's really interesting that there is even a schism between, like, let's say global corporate marketing entity and then a product marketing entity, which is very much aligned to the business unit or the product and engineering team. I thought it was interesting why there are certain disconnects, not everywhere, but you know, in a lot of places.
Well, and then same thing on the funnel. So maybe we have challenges on conversion. Maybe we have challenges on retention. Perhaps we shift some of the dollars to sales. Perhaps do some joint initiatives with customer success to help fix whatever challenges might be in those areas. Because if we don't fix those things, and let's say marketing's doing great, that is like trying to market when you've got a leaky bucket.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Just trying to put more dollars of stuff's just kind of coming out the bottom.
Coming out, right? So let's plug those holes. Then we can really lean in on more marketing. So there's just such an opportunity for marketing to really think about this more strategically, think about leaning in on our deep market knowledge and using that to drive conversation and ultimately alignment at that leadership team.
Yep. And I think in the past, everyone said, yes, what you just said, Lisa, is exactly what we want, but we don't have maybe the talent, the time, the resources in order to be able to accomplish that, but that's not an excuse anymore. And I think that's sort of at the core of sort of the AI technology component of this is marketing is a strategic function, but now we're having a tool that allows more marketers to be able to have that strategic focus, whereas they didn't have it before. They were just given constraints and they had to deal with those constraints and then serve up things that were, yes, pretty tactical because of the strengths, you know, under which they were operating. And it just became a vicious cycle of that perception of marketing being tactical so that they didn't get the dollars or the resources are needed to do something strategic, and therefore they can continue to do things tactical. And that perpetuated the stereotype. So this has been great. Let's head to the lightning round segment of our show. You're just going to give it just a quick thought about distilling sort of the big takeaway of what you think people should just walk away with at the end of the show. Could it be something about the topic, or it could be something that's really specific to you, or something that you just, a conversation you've just been having a lot recently. I'll start just to give you a little couple of seconds to think about what you want yours to be. And I think the big takeaway for me is scalability. This isn't unique to marketing. This is across the board, especially being in a B2B space, which a lot of our listeners are in that sort of B2B marketing space. We talk about helping technologists, IT teams, CIOs, technology teams, customers do more with less. IT teams have to do more with less. And we as marketers have that same constraint. We have this budget, we have these resources, and we have this time. What can you do with that? And we're finding now that we can be more strategic or engage in more strategic activity because now, like you said, there's democratization of strategic thinking. There's a democratization of intelligence, as some people like to call it. It's a bit of a hot topic, but it allows you to plug into a resource that you didn't previously have and do things that you couldn't previously do. Were not possible because you needed humans, you needed agencies, et cetera, to be able to accomplish them now. Now you have those at your fingertips. But the big point of my lightning round topic is it's because you know what good is. It's because you are the strategic thinker in this loop, not because the AI is giving that to you. It's because you know what needs to be done. You just need the resources in order to accomplish it. You can evaluate, know if it's good or not, and then present it to others. That's the big takeaway I like people to sort of think about. That's what exists now. But we need people who know what good is. Junior people who are potentially replaced by artificial intelligence or LLMs or these different things, where are the senior people going to come from in the future if we're not training those senior people who know what's good right now and bring them up in the ranks? So we need good people who are great at what they do so that they can leverage the technology. Otherwise, the technology isn't really worth anything.
So for a lightning round, I would say first one that comes to mind all the time is I think we need to push AI to its fullest potential and go beyond thinking of it as an intern, go beyond thinking of it for content creation only. Use it as a thought partner. Use it for ideation and collaboration, for automation, for personalization, and then research and analytics for deep market insights. So those are my five things.
Love it.
I also believe that we need to be so intensely curious.
Yes.
Push this thing. Unlike in collaborating with humans where there's a fear of being judged, this thing will not judge you. So be stupid with it. Ask it crazy questions.
I love that because that's one of the intimidating pieces. Like, oh, well, I'm not a prompt engineer. I don't know how to prompt this. Well, ask it what to prompt. Say, hey, look, I'm just using you for the first time. This is my job. Here's my job description. And what should I be thinking about even? Like, because some people don't even have a concept of even how to interact with it. Just start asking it just questions about what questions you should even be asking. What questions should I ask you? Yes, be curious. And that curiosity will lead you into all sorts of different ways. I love that thought.
Be completely transparent about what you don't know, what you do know. You know, I talk to Claude and I say, Claude, I have an idea. I just want to brainstorm with you. I have not fully formulated my thoughts. This is my stream of consciousness. I'm not even saying it grammatically correct. Is that okay? And it says, yes, just tell me what you need and I'll help you. So like it starts literally with that kind of conversation. And then the last thing, which I tell people a lot, is just give ourselves some grace. Oh, my God. Like this fear and this anxiety, I know it's real because I have it. But I have gotten to the point where I say I cannot have imposter syndrome because nobody is an expert. No one is in a good position to judge. We are all simply in this journey all together, learning from each other. So share. Learn from others and be vocal about what you believe in. And AI literacy is just so important. When we are literate, when we understand it, we are in a much better position to make decisions for ourselves, our families, society, and the world, versus when we're not understanding of it, then we are at risk of relying on being influenced on others who may or may not have the same values as us. So that is my guidance to everybody. Just understand it and get your hands on it to the extent that you can.
I like it. And I think that a good way for people to wrap their heads around that as well, too, with AI literacy, because sometimes AI literacy can be intimidating for people. And like, what, I have to be some expert on AI and large learning models and know how to train? It's like, no, just think back when the internet was new and we just needed internet literacy. And they're like, oh, well, yeah, that's not intimidating. I didn't have to be an expert on, you know, domain name servers and TCP/IP and all that. No, you don't have to be a technical. You just have to understand what it means, what the technology means, what its value is, what it can, cannot do, how it was designed on a very, 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 very basic level. So just think of it that way. Like if you talked about internet literacy now and you're teaching like your kids or others right now about what that means, just see that it's kind of that simple. Just approach in the same way, but understand what the AI is. And I think that would be good.
I love that. I love that, Yadin.
Excellent. Well, Lisa, where can people find you, find more about you, what you're up to, and reach out to you? How can people interact with you?
Yes. Well, I'll be on LinkedIn. So it's just Lisa, L-I-Z-A Adams. And you can also find me on my website, growthpath.net.
Excellent. Fabulous. Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining the AI Edge podcast.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here.